CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel, as always, is Safia Boulay of New Habits.
Hi, Richard. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Making shift happen, hey? Mm. In the first half hour of our business skills conversation, which is brought to you in association with USB Ed, we're going to be talking about working capital and cash flow management in our business. Last week, we spoke to Adam Rabinowitz on the importance of identifying and improving your most effective sales channels and looking for your high-value clients. That's a great podcast. Download that from our website. Today, our guest in studio is Celeste Fanikak, a founder of Think Growth and a facilitator with USB Ed. Welcome to the studio, Celeste.
Thanks, Richard. Looking forward to it.
Thanks for being with us. So, there's that old saying, cash is king. So, that's the only thing I should be worrying about in my business, eh, Celeste? Cash flow, that's all it's about.
I wish it was that simple. If you go back to the saying, it actually starts with sale is vanity, profit is sanity, and then cash is king.
Ah, okay.
And it all goes back to what do you have to sell for your customers? And then taking it forward to making some profits before you get to the cash part. A lot of businesses just focus on the cash part. And yes, it does help the business, but it's not the be-all and end-all. It starts with having the right product for your clients, selling it at the right price, and then making some cash of it. Mm-hmm. Because what you do with the cash thereafter is quite critical in the business.
Okay. So, I mean, if I think of cash as my lifeblood in my body or in the life of my business, I guess the question then is, I mean, I'm selling something, I guess, at the end of the day. I might be selling services. Most probably I'm selling something in inventory, an item, a tangible item. So that means, based on what you're telling me, I should go out there, get as much inventory as I can, and load that into my business and sell it out the front door. As much inventory as possible is the way to go.
Now, you can, depending on what sort of business you're in. And if you're retail and you've got a lot of footfall coming through your store, of course, you want to have the right stock at the right time for your customers. But how I like to see cash often is, if you were to think of having a pile of cash on your shelf or on your showroom floor and customers walking past that pile of cash, very few of us would just have a pile of cash sitting there, dusting it every morning, putting it out on display. You actually want to move that pile of cash. And that's what inventory is to a business. Mm. It's a pile of cash standing there. And if it's not moving, it's holding up all your cash. And you can't buy more inventory that's actually selling and moving. Mm. So I know very few businesses that's just going to have a pile of cash sitting on their shelves, looking pretty, not doing anything. It's not working for them. It's not getting them a return on investment.
Okay, so that's a very vivid picture. I'm having moments here of thinking of blocks of cash. And in fact, I've spoken about this once before, but I'll repeat the analogy because I think it's appropriate here. Is many years ago we were talking about the importance of managing cash carefully in a retail environment in from a banking perspective. And I remember us creating an advert where we had a 100-rand note and it was moving between different people in a retail store, as you know, from a customer to a cashier. And then when the cashier cashed up at the end of the day, you saw this picture of this note and it went from having 100 rand to having 99 rand was the number. And then the cashier, the people that in the central cash area were counting the cash and putting it in, getting it ready to go to the bank, and the number was 98. And then you see it going to the bank teller who's now counting, and you can see the bank emblem in the background. And as she's counting the cash, it's now 97. And so this cash moves through quite quickly in imagery. But the message was that cash actually costs you money to move it from one place in the business to the other and through your banking system, and that you need to realize that every time you move cash, it's costing you money. And in much the same way, every time inventory moves through the business, there's a cost associated with the inventory and its movement. And I guess the whole principle would be keep that move as few as possible – yes, as few times as possible, and try not to change its nature too many times before you actually turn it into hard cash and actually get cash in from your client base. Now, I mean, what you're describing here, what is inventory? I mean, what does inventory form in your business? What would we call it traditionally?
Well, inventory can be different things for different businesses depending on the space that they're in. So in a retail space, typically the products that you're selling, that's on your shelf.
Okay.
If you're in a manufacturing environment, it's those raw materials that you bring onto your floor, into your plant where you're going to produce it to become something selling or able to sell it later on. And if in a service environment, it's actually the service that you deliver, the people that you have and the service that they provide can become a form of inventory, because if they're there and you've got them on the floor but they're not producing a service that you can sell, you know, they're costing you money.
They're costing you money.
And the thing with inventory is a lot of people will order inventory, or a lot of companies will order inventory. They'll keep it on their floor, but they're too scared to mark it down and sell it because they've set their price and they want to make that profits. And if they're not able to move it, they'll keep it there. But it's gathering dust. It's not doing anything for them. And it's tying up their money. So instead of then marking it down and saying, let's move this, let's have a sales item or a manager's markdown just to get rid of the inventory and then get cash in to buy different stock. And I think that's quite important, is if something's not moving, don't make the same mistake twice. No. You know, if it's not moving, sell it and then buy something that you know your customers really want and that is selling and moving and you can make a profit on. Because just because inventory is moving and cash is exchanging hands doesn't mean you've got profits in the business. It's just money moving in and out.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what's important to realize is changing inventory for cash on a, let's call it a 1-for-1 ratio, doesn't really help you either. It's about, you know, I bought this for 10 Rand, I'm now selling it for 20. That's where your profit margin is. What I always have asked myself the question, and I think lots of people have this debate, and you can have it on multiple different types of assets, so to speak. Inventory is a classic one of when do you make your profit? And I always argue with people and say you actually make your profit when you buy your inventory. Okay. And what I mean by that is if you don't buy right and go through an effective procurement process that lets you buy in your inventory at the right levels, you've got to be really careful, because the market generally is not in a space of I take a price of what I bought it something for, I add my margin to it, you know, I mark it up, you know, 50% and say, well, there's my selling price, because you could very well find yourself outpriced in the market. So when you're acquiring inventory, I know it might sound a little strange, but you've got to be careful that you almost lock in your level of profitability almost on the purchase. You can't just blindly say, oh, well, I'll take any price from my supplier. You may be importing the goods. Oh, well, any exchange rate will do. It doesn't really matter because, hey, my clients will just pay what I mark up and expect. There is a ceiling on the selling price of your inventory at some point. And, yeah, if you buy badly, you're going to hit that. That's going to become a real challenge. Now, we talk, there's this wider concept of working capital, and inventory is a portion of working capital. Let's talk about the other elements of working capital. Take us through that working capital cycle.
So the working capital cycle consists of when you start to buy your inventory. So like you rightly said, at the right price that you know you can sell on later. So that's quite critical. And especially today with our consumers being very smart around what products are out there, and it's being a large competitive base out there for many retailers and many businesses, you know, they know what they want and what they've what they can afford or what they're willing to pay for it. So you want to buy smart, like you said. And often that means buying bulk and then trying to get some discount on that bulk buying power if you're big enough. So inventory is one part of it. Then if you're in manufacturing environment, how long does it take you to manufacture your goods? You actually want that to be quite quick, or as quick as possible, and almost in a just-in-time sort of environment. So when the demand is there for your product, you have that product available to your customers. From there on, depending whether you sell cash or whether it's on credit, you're going to get your money in once you sell the product. Or if it's on credit, you're going to wait your terms, whether it's 30 days or 60 days, whatever that credit term might be for your customers before you get your cash in. So typically, that's the cycle you'll go through. And then right at the end, you still have your suppliers to pay. So it's one thing getting the inventory in, producing your raw materials into a product that you can sell, or buying your finished good and then selling it. You still have to get that cash in because you have to pay suppliers, and not just suppliers, another big expense for any business, salaries. Mm. Because I know of no employee that's going to come to work when you say, you know what, short of cash, come back 30 days from now, I'm going to pay you. You know, not.
So it sounds like a good idea to try, but I'm not sure you're going to get away with that.
No, very few employees are going to wait 60 days or 90 days to get their salary. So, you know, that's another thing that businesses have got to think about. Do we have enough cash come month end to pay our employees and suppliers?
Well, and I think you've got to almost remember there's almost a, let me call it a negative in the cash flow cycle, because most employees want to get paid on the 25th,
yeah,
somewhere between the 25th and the 30th of the month. It's actually quite unusual nowadays to pay people on the last day of the month. Mm-hmm. Most people want to be paid before that. So effectively, you're paying them maybe anywhere between 3 and 5 days earlier,
yeah,
than the end of the month, and they have to still deliver services for that period of time.
Yeah. And most businesses, if you sell on credit, say 30 days from invoice or 30 days from statement, which means they only get paid by the 30th or 31st of the month,
mm-hmm,
but that employee gets paid by the 25th. So they've got to be able to carry that business to still carry on buying supplies and raw materials or finished goods and keep on going for 5 days without money coming in, which can be for some business a really tight period of time.
Yeah. So that's your, let me call it your debtors or accounts receivable element in the working capital, yeah, cycle. And then you talked a little about paying the people who supply you out there. I mean, is it normal to expect credit terms from your suppliers in a business? I mean, is this like, you know, I apply for, or I start buying from you, you will give me an account? Is that standard operating procedure?
I guess it depends on the size of your business and kind of the name that you have out there. So if you're a well-known brand and people know who you are, it's a lot easier to negotiate preferential payment terms for your business. If you're starting out new, people don't know you, they don't know what your business is about, they do a lot of credit checks on you before they'll give you any sort of credit. A lot of companies prefer to work on cash on delivery because there's a risk involved for them if they give you the product or the service and you're not going to pay for them. So a lot of it depends on your name as a company, your reputation, and how you conduct your business. And if, depending on the product, if it's readily available and they can buy it from anybody, you've got a better opportunity to negotiate payment terms. If it's a scarce product and only they supply you, they kind of make the rules to say, you know what, sorry, cash on delivery or not at all.
So I find that this fascinating, because I come from a religious background where we're not doing too much credit and interest and all those kinds of things. So is there ever an argument when you have got cash in your pocket to actually buy on credit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So it depends on what you want to use that cash for. So if you've got money in your pocket or in the bank account and you still want to buy products and you can get it on credit, you've got to ask yourself, what am I going to do with that money? How's it going to work for me? And for a lot of businesses, that means expanding their footprint, growing the business, either opening up more retail stores or more offices, or it might mean growing the products that they have on their shelves, or manufacturing more items. But for a lot of businesses, that extra cash is being used to generate a greater footprint, which then increase their market share, which will ultimately increase profits. If you're at a stage in your business where you don't need that and you've got money in the bank. Then it's around saying, okay, so what's the best that this money can do for me? And then maybe negotiating terms up front to say, I'm paying up front, but I would like a 5% or 10% discount, might then be to the benefit of the business, because then you're getting that discount and you're not earning the same amount of interest. You're actually working better, or your money's working better for you, because the discount that you're getting is much higher than the interest that you would have got on that money.
So it's the negotiation power.
Mm. It is that negotiation power.
I was going to say, for me, you know, cash in hand, when you then go and talk to a business and say, well, I can pay you cash. I mean, it's not uncommon, you know, you hear people saying, oh, well, I want a 2.5% or a 3% or a 5%. I mean, I've recently seen somebody ridiculously saying, I want a 10% discount. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, well, let me just do the numbers here. So a 2% discount, if I was for immediate payment as opposed to waiting 30 days, if you annualize up that number just on a simple multiplier, not compounding effect, that's an effective interest rate of 2% for 30 days mm-hmm. or immediate settlement is an effective interest rate of 24%.
Okay.
So anybody out here who's got a bank account that's giving them a 24% interest rate, no one I know. And then the numbers go up from there. So 3% settlement is 36%. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those lovely people who asked for a 10% discount, I mean, effectively they wanted interest at 120% per annum. I mean, that's ridiculous, but that's what people are thinking about.
So then my understanding then of what you guys are saying is that cash is king mm-hmm. unless credit is king.
You're confusing the terms. Yeah. So I think the important thing is to differentiate what you can use that cash for, and can you use that cash more effectively than the discounts that you can receive.
Okay.
So if I can put the cash to use in, say, for example, buying more stock that I can make, say, a 40% margin on, and I can get a 2% discount – well, 2% on an annualized basis is 24%. I can make a 40% margin on using that cash to buy more inventory and turn the inventory. Thanks, I'll take the 40% rather than the 24. But if I'm getting, you know, if I can only make a 15% margin and I can get a settlement discount at 2% per month, well, then that 24% is starting to make a bit more sense for me.
And I think the big thing is your money's got to work for you.
Yeah.
You know, we always say your money's got to work for you, but those examples that Richard uses, absolutely that. How can you use it to the best effect for the business?
Yeah.
And also be very clear on what you want to do with your business. Is it growth and expansion, and how do you use cash for that? Or are you at a stage where you want to get more bang for your buck?
Mm-hmm.
And see how you can use it. I mean, I know of a company, don't ask me how, but their payment got lost in between transferring lines in the bank. And that settlement that they missed because of that was $2.3 million.
Wow.
One payment. Nobody knows where that payment went, but it took the bank days to relocate it and allocate it to the supplier, who just said, sorry, we didn't get it on time.
My answer would have been debit bank on that one.
They did go recourse to the bank, mm-hmm. but it took some time to get that. And that's just, you know, that's the importance of that discount and money flowing at the right time, where appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I mean, when you talk of, you know, accounts receivable and accounts payable, I mean, I guess the whole point would be, just as your suppliers are going to vet you, you should be vetting the people that buy from you on the same basis. It sometimes worries me how easily people give credit. Mm. They don't, for example, you know, do a bank reference check. They don't do a credit check. And it's amazing the stuff that you find out when you do a simple ITC check on a person and the stuff that comes bubbling out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the day, how do you determine how much credit you should give to somebody? What's the rule of thumb, if there is one?
So how
as little as possible is probably the answer.
How long is a piece of string? I guess that's the answer. No, I think if you look at what the product is, who's your customer, and sort of what sort of collateral do they provide, that's an indication. So if we look at our banks, they will say when it comes to loans, they often want assets as collateral. And if it's a home loan, they're going to say the house. If it's a vehicle, they want the vehicle as collateral. And if it's a personal loan, they want a little bit of everything. So that's where they say, okay, it's a big amount. We're talking millions here. So, you know, there's an asset to support that. When it comes to some of your business to business and, you know, what it is that the customer can afford, then it's different, because there you're going to look at what is it that you're supplying. Do they have a record? And often the more you buy and the better your payment record, the more you can get. A lot of companies work off 30 days. So that's kind of where they feel comfortable to give 30 days credit. And often, what do you use this product for? So the example that I used where the payment didn't go through, there was around 75 to 80 million account every month. You know, so that's what they were comfortable with providing, because this customer have been working with them for 10 years. They had a proven track record. They kept on paying. So they were comfortable giving them that sort of credit. But it's different for different business. The big thing for me when it comes to accounts receivable is that you're comfortable with your terms and conditions. In other words, you can say to somebody, here's our product, you have it for free for a month or 60 days or 90 days, whatever you're comfortable with, and we can withstand this business. We can continue running our business without having your money for that period of time. Mm. And when it comes to payment, and this is where a lot of companies then struggle, is that you actually ensure that you make sure those payment dates are adhered to. So if you're comfortable with 30 days, then you've got to have a 30-day account, or make sure your accounts payable or your accounts receivable, your debtors pay you at 30 days. If it's 60 days, they've got to pay you in 60 days. What is currently happening is people are rolling their cash. Businesses are rolling cash because they're short on cash flow. They want to expand and grow, but they don't have it. They've got big orders coming in. They don't have the raw materials or the product for it. So now they start postponing payment to their suppliers so they can fulfill this big order, but then they don't have the immediate cash to pay their suppliers. So from an accounts receivable, from debtors, you've got to manage that book. And in tough economic times that we are experiencing now, that's the first thing to go. People keep on promising, oh, next month, next month, next month. And we see more and more businesses going into business rescue because of that. So that's the thing you've got to manage.
I'm always amazed, and I mean, working in the financial management space, you often see, and the feedback coming from people collecting is often in the very traditional, you know, let's call it a line item on a spreadsheet for against a particular client. And you'll see the annotation that the clerk puts in that says, called client, payment promised by month end. And I laugh and I go, great, payment promised by month end. But we're in the middle of the month and their payment was actually due 15 days ago. Yep. So no, payment not due at the end of the month, or payment not made at the end of the month, payment made right now or stop supply. And it amazes me how businesses seem to be challenged with this principle of stop supply. And you kind of go, well, the more you supply them without them paying you, the more you're giving them a rod to hit you on the head with and go, you know, sorry, I'm not going to pay you. Sorry, I'm not going to pay you. Not going to pay you. Not going to pay you. I mean, I've seen examples of this in my own business where you try and work with a client to get something to happen. And then the next minute they're out of business or, you know, they're not able to pay. And you're the one left sitting holding the debtor's book. And you look at this and you say, well, you know, I try to do the right thing for the client, but they sure didn't do right by me. So that's an interesting one.
I know of some entrepreneurs that's been in business for quite some time, and they went through a merger and acquisition in their business and kind of let the ball drop on the sales side of things. And as a result of that, there were no new work coming in. So they hit a point where they all of a sudden realized, we don't have new work coming in, so there's no money coming in, so we can't pay for anything. And they actually did a very responsible thing. They went to all their suppliers, so the landlord, the printers, whomever they could negotiate with, and they said to them, they played open cards. They said, we're in a bad financial state. We didn't do what we're supposed to do. There's a few new jobs coming in, but we need to postpone payment. So they made arrangement to make small increment payments over a period of time until they were back up on their feet and they could actually make good on all the payments. And that took them a good 6 to 12 months to get that right. But they were upfront about the position and they worked very hard to get it right. It's when people go quiet and they don't negotiate with those suppliers when you run into a lot of difficulties.
I think that's probably the sagest piece of advice we've had in a few weeks on the show. You know, make sure that you're communicating clearly with your creditors if there is an issue. Mm-hmm. And what I always find quite amazing is if you make that phone call, I have personally been on the receiving end of some of those types of phone calls, and you actually as the creditor, you're understanding because you too are working with some of these challenges, and you go, okay, that's gone wrong in your business. Thanks for being direct and upfront about it. Okay, let's figure out what we can do here. Because you don't actually want that person to disappear as a client, because it's much harder to find a new client than it is to get the old client, keep an old client happy. And more importantly, the moment that starts happening, the acquisition cost of a new client goes up, and the risk associated with the new client is exactly the same as the guy who's now having real problems.
Yeah.
Except you know that the guy you've dealt with has at least paid you for X number of months before. A new client you've got absolutely no track record on. So yeah, I'd rather take the person who's open and honest and upfront with you. But I must admit, I get really angry when I know that somebody knew that they were in trouble, but they didn't say anything to you. That's just it kind of feels a little bit below the belt.
No, and I mean, I think kudos to them because they were honest about it, and they really had those tough conversations with the various suppliers just to say, you know, things are not well. This is how we're going to get out of it. And they were open, like you say, rather the devil you know than the devil you don't.
Than the devil you don't. Okay. Well, Celeste, I think it's been very enlightening around how we manage working capital. I just think for me the one thing that always strikes home for me is the fact that it's imperative that you manage that entire cycle of inventory, the debtors, and your creditors, and your, let's call it, your net cash position, really carefully in your business, and that you don't lose sight of any one of those, because losing sight of one of them spells disaster. You can't just focus on, the debtors book but not worry about the inventory, or just the inventory and not worry about the debtors. And unfortunately, your creditors don't often let you take your eye off that ball. They are constantly phoning, reminding you that payment is due.
Yeah.
But it's something that you need to be almost, let's call them, exclusively and inclusively aware of, and that entire cycle, making sure that it all works together.
I just want to add, I mean, something that I really take away from is the fact that you shared that you've got to know what you want to achieve with your business. Mm.
Critical.
Because there's no formula that fits all situations. What you do with your cash is really, really dependent on what your long-term outcome is. Mm. So that was a big one for me.
Mm. Absolutely. And that whole cycle is the lifeline in any business, because without cash, you can't do anything.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
That was Celeste van Niekerk, our guest today. Thank you very much for your time, Celeste. Next up, we get a little bit more practical with our business conversation. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.